Hi, my name is Frankie. Thank you for listening to Two My Mom. I never listen.
In this episode of Nothing But Net with Debbie Antonelli, Debbie is joined by John Gibbs, who likes to be referred to as the greatest fan of women's basketball. John tells Debbie how he became such a fan of women's basketball. It all started with a chance with tickets to a second round matchup in Norman, Oklahoma, which saw the Oklahoma Sooners play against the Stanford Cardinals. He also talked about seeing Jackie Stiles play in that same tournament in 2001 against the top seeded Duke Blue Devils. And if you know women's basketball, you know how that game turned out. He also talks about his love for the KL Cancer Fund and his support of that. John and Debbie even break down this year's Final Four, and he gives his thoughts on all the teams involved. So please sit back and enjoy a very special episode of Nothing But Net with Debbie Antonelli.
Had a lot of special guests on this podcast, but there's a really great friend of mine that loves this game maybe as much or more than I do. It would be certainly a great balance on a seesaw to figure out who loves the game the most. But John Gibbs and Sue Gibbs are great friends of women's basketball, and that's the way he likes to be introduced, the greatest fan of women's basketball. John, thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Boy, it's my pleasure. I'm happy to be here.
John, we met a long time ago, and the way we met is through our mutual friend, Jackie Stiles. And this Final Four is the 20th anniversary of Jackie Stiles and Missouri State going to the Final Four. Tell us about how you fell in love with the game, because a lot of people know about hashtag the Gibbs through your love and support of the KL Cancer Fund. But they might not know your story, John.
Okay. No, that sounds fun. I guess you know that Michelle Vopel just put out a great article on this 20th anniversary of Missouri State and talked about Jackie a bunch in that article. It just came out, I guess, yesterday or today. And so that's a great deal. But we were at a game at Oklahoma. I went to it by accident, and it was in 2001. March of 2001, went to the game at Oklahoma, had never watched a women's basketball game before, and it was a great game. It was OU and Stanford. It was sold out, over 12,000 people. It was very electric. It was exciting. People were cheering. And I said, wow, this was a lot of fun. And so I said, you know, this team is going to Washington next week for the Sweet 16, and so I'm going to watch them on TV. So that next Saturday came, and I sat down a little early, and there was a game getting ready to start before ours, and it was the Southwest Missouri versus Duke. Duke was the overall number one seed, and Southwest Missouri and Jackie Stiles was a 5 seed. And that was a phenomenal game. Jackie put up 41 points on Elena Beard and anybody else they could throw at her, and it was phenomenal. And as a side note, I just ran into Gil Gestenkors just the other night in San Antonio, and she was asking me how I got to be involved in women's basketball. And I said, Gil, you were a big participant in that, because it was because of Jackie Stiles in that game that really caught my attention. It was one of the greatest athletic performances I'd ever seen. And I believe Roy Williams said the same thing. I saw he had watched that game and said, I could watch Jackie Stiles play all night long. And she was just phenomenal. So that really hooked me and got me going watching Jackie. And over the years, Jackie's become a great friend. And I've got her statue right here behind me. We actually helped with that statue they put up of hers. And yeah. I think she was the first women's player to have her statue. Or actually, she's got two, but yeah, she was one of the first.
She definitely has two statues, and you helped put one on campus right outside the John Q. Hammond's Athletic Center, or whatever they call it there. That place is one of the best places I've ever seen women's basketball game back in the day when Jackie was playing, John. It was unreal how excited those people were about her and her teammates.
It was fun. Yeah, that was a fun time. And we did not, that, like I said, that was her, almost her last game. She ended up playing, after Duke, she played Washington, and then Purdue was her final game. And I watched both of those games, but I never saw her play in person. I mean, that was my first game, was against Duke, that I saw her on TV. And your friend, but I've got a copy of that game that I pull out and watch every once in a while. And Beth Mowins was the sideline reporter in that game. So,
yeah, I you actually sent me a copy of that game, and I'm going to have to go back and watch it now that we bring it up and it's the 20th anniversary, because I do remember how much fun it was to watch that game. And while Beth was the sideline reporter, this is just to tell you how where our careers have gone. She was the reporter on that game. I was calling the D2 championship on the women's side in somewhere in Minneapolis. Or in Minnesota somewhere. I can't remember. I think it was in Minneapolis. Anyway, now we get to call the Final Four and get to be a part of this great event on this level. So, John, you are an incredible student of the game. I know how hard you work at being a fan. You're an excellent research assistant, too. You know, you come up with stuff that really challenged me to dig a little deeper. So why don't you tell us how many games you've watched, like last year or this year versus the pandemic, and then we're going to break down the Final Four.
Okay, well, last year I watched 451 games in total, and I believe it was 71 in person. But with the pandemic and actually starting our season November 25th and lost almost a full month, I only got in 388 games so far this year and 46 in person so far. So,
and that is not embellishing at all. That is watching start to finish.
I don't write it down unless I watch the whole game.
John,
three quarters don't count.
And, of course, Sue is right beside you for most of those.
Yeah, a lot of them.
We got to give Sue some credit there. Okay, let's talk about the first game. We've got South Carolina and Stanford. Tell me what you think about South Carolina first.
Well, South Carolina is very tough. And, watched them a number of times this year. Leah Boston, obviously, is one of the best big players in the country. Zaya Cook is a phenomenal shooter, but I will say in the last couple of games I've been extremely impressed with Victoria Saxton. I mean, she has played lights out, rebounding, she's all around that basket, so she's been fun to watch. Destiny Littleton, Bria Beal, obviously all of them have been phenomenal. Amir here, they're tall, they're lanky, they're fun to watch, so very athletic.
And what's your take on Tara Vanderveer's team, Stanford? They're the overall number one seed. This is 29 years between championships for Tara. The last time she won was in 1992. What do you think about Stanford?
Well, when I was doing my brackets, I actually filled out three brackets with the three teams that I thought were the most likely to win the championship, and Stanford was one of them, and UConn was one, and then I picked Maryland as my third one because I really thought Maryland was gonna give everybody a run. But but Stanford is just amazing. They're very, very tall at pretty much every position except their guards. Cameron Brink has just played lights out inside. She's 6'4". She's extremely athletic. Fran Belibi is a phenomenal player who can jump out of the gym, and she dunks all the time. She was dunking in high school. And Cameron Brink, I think, has actually moved in front of Fran on the depth chart and everything. So, I mean, they are – and then they've got number 11, Prechtl, that came in and just – scored threes and everything. Yeah. And so anyway, they're great inside, lot of length, but they're also great shooters. They got Williams and Wilson that can shoot lights out. So anyway, they've got everything.
So now you have to put the game plan together between these two teams. And, you know, like, what does Stanford have to do to win? And then what does South Carolina have to do to win?
Well, that's a good question. I think that Stanford, in a lot of their games, they have played Belibi and Cameron Brink at the same time. And I think they're going to have to play both of them because Boston and Saxton are usually in the game together. So they're going to have to match those two. But I think it's going to match up. Both teams are athletic. I think it's just going to matter who's shooting the best. I mean, they both are great defensive teams. In that game the other night, Louisville was doing a really good job, Stanford couldn't score. And I think they shot 29% that first half. They can't do that against Stanford. They're going to have to, they're going to have to hang in there and score.
Well, who do you think will win the Battle of the Glass, Stanford or South Carolina?
I really like Stanford on the glass. I think they're tall, and I say that Saxton and Boston are very, very good on the glass. So it should be a real good battle. I mean, really should be.
Who do you think will make more threes, Stanford or South Carolina?
Boy, based on what I've just seen in the last few games, Stanford has been very, very good from the three. South Carolina is not bad, but I'm not certain they're shooting quite as good from the three as Stanford. So
if the game becomes transition up and down and the game is played really fast, who do you think that favors?
Zaya Cook and Henderson are very, very fun to watch. They're quick, they're fast, and they can get up and down the court in a hurry. So I would almost go with South Carolina, I think.
Okay, that's pretty good. All right, let's. You got two for Stanford, one for South Carolina. I'm not going to make you pick the winner yet, and I'm going to let you move to the next game. Okay, so tell me we're going to do Arizona and UConn. Let's start with Arizona first. Adia Barnes, her fifth year as a head coach, Arizona was a 3 seed. They have not been to the NCAA tournament since 2005. And now they're in the Final Four. And they've got this little player named Ari McDonald, and I know you probably absolutely love her.
She's phenomenal. I've watched her a number of games, and she can put up a lot of points in a hurry. And but when you watch the game and you watch the stats, Arizona has to have Ari McDonald scoring a bunch. In the game the other night against Indiana, the supporting cast really did not have a lot of points, and Indiana did a good job holding Kate Reese down and holding some of the other girls. Thomas didn't score a whole lot, and so Aerie's really got to show up, but she has all year. So yeah.
She has. What about UConn? I know you love Paige Beckers. She's the AP National Player of the Year, first time a freshman has ever won that award. She's phenomenal, and she's got a great supporting cast. What do you think about UConn this year?
Well, Paige Beckers is phenomenal, and she is. She's the first freshman to ever win the Player of the Year, and so she's phenomenal. But the supporting cast, I've really been impressed with that freshman, Aaliyah Edwards. Mm-hmm. I mean, she's really come on strong here at the end of the season. She's playing phenomenal. She's 6'3", but she's a tremendous athlete and plays just great around the basket. And I've been real impressed with her. And, of course, Kristen Williams has played lights out in the game the other night. Westbrook, when she's hot, she can score a lot of threes. So they're very athletic, and they're hard to beat.
Do you think UConn can keep Ari McDonald from getting 30 points?
That's a very good question. I think that UConn has tremendous athletes, and I'm trying to think who they would actually put on her. It's likely that they would put probably Kristen Williams or Westbrook. maybe even bring in Aubrey Griffin, because Aubrey has length and everything, and she's fast and a tremendous athlete. She might be very good. And I would maybe rotate those players around on her to, you know, but because they definitely have a lot of length there on that UConn, and they do have some speed. So, but they're going to have to keep her from getting 30, because she can do it.
Do you think Arizona can force 15 UConn turnovers?
Yeah, no, I think they can. I think Arizona plays very good defense. That's one of their strengths and one of the reasons why they can beat an Indiana without putting up a lot of points is they have a very, very good defense. And I think they can force some turnovers. And sometimes UConn gets to playing a little fast, and they have turned over the ball this year some. So I think they can force turnovers.
If you know, Ari McDonald and Paige Beckers are two players that you're not going to stop. You're just going to try to slow them down, contain them, try to take something away from them, not let them do what they like to do. Do you think Sam Thomas can keep Paige Beckers from going right and make her go left?
I don't think anybody can keep her from going wherever she wants to go, to be honest. She's an amazing dribbler, and she can head one direction and go the other in a heartbeat. I mean, you just hardly even see her going. She's so quick. And I think Ari McDonald can pretty much get where she wants to go. And so it'll just, I think the length, they're going to have to put somebody very fast on her that's fairly tall and, you know, try to give her some grief that way. Maybe double her some. Yeah.
So Arizona needs the game to be in the 60s and 70s.
Maybe they need to slow it down. Yeah, they need to slow it down.
Do you think they can keep UConn under 75?
I don't think so. I think UConn is a scoring machine. I mean, and if you slow up Beckers even a little bit, Williams and Westbrook and Adoto's been playing well. Edwards, they can score at all positions. So
if you had to pick the winner between Stanford and South Carolina and Arizona and UConn, have you filled out your bracket to how you think it's going to work?
Yeah, no, I from day one, I've been watching Stanford for all year, and they're pretty invincible. They're very, very tough. I think that Stanford and UConn will be the matchup, and that will be a phenomenal game. If that's the matchup, that will be phenomenal.
And who do you have as the winner?
Now that's an interesting question. A number of years ago, I was having dinner with Stacy Hansmeier. And I was telling Stacy Hansmeier all of the reasons why UConn was going to lose 5 games that season before they even hit conference play. And she told me, she said, "John, I would never, ever bet against Gino Auriemma." Well, it turns around they got the conference play. They hadn't lost a single game. And she was right. So as of right now, I would never bet against Gino Auriemma with a good team.
Well, he's 11-0 when he gets to the championship game. He's never lost in that environment. It's amazing, isn't it?
I would not bet against him, I tell you.
It's the numbers at UConn are so phenomenal, like 13 consecutive Final Fours, 21 overall, 11 titles. Every time I have them and I dig into their numbers, it just seems like there's one number that's more impressive than another, than another, than another. I mean, it's phenomenal what they've built. When you look at UConn, what's the one thing that stands out to you?
Well, if you're talking like coaching, I mean, Gino and Chris Daly have been there forever, and they're both great coaches, and they're great recruiters. And if you recruit great players and coach them like Gino does, he's phenomenal at what he does. There's nobody better. And so I think their strength is their coaches. I mean, they're really good.
They are amazing to watch, and I think they're going to keep coming here because they just keep getting more talent. And there's a whole thing out there, some narrative about, you know, Paige is the player of the year because she's at UConn. That's not true. Paige is the player of the year because Paige has been the best player all season, and you can measure it up in a lot of different ways. But she's had a phenomenal run as a freshman, and I don't think her carrying hardware home is done yet as the AP National Player of the Year. I think she's got a couple of other things that might be happening soon also.
Okay. Yeah, well, you know, speaking of recruiting, you know, they got the number one recruit in the nation coming in next year, and that AZ Bud, or, you know, she's tremendous also.
Well, John, I see behind you, I know on a podcast people can't see, but you have your KYAO Cancer Fund. It looks like a certificate back there, or maybe it's an award. I'm not really sure what it is, but you have been a friend and supporter, you and Sue, in a lot of different ways of the fund. Why?
Well, we, you know, there's a couple of reasons. I mean, obviously, the KYAO Cancer Fund supports research for cancer, and that's very, very important. But we, as you mentioned, we love women's basketball, and the KYAO Cancer Fund is the, you know, the charity of choice for women's basketball, and their board of directors is a who's who in women's basketball. I mean, you're on it. Lynn Holzman, the vice president of NCAA, is on it. There's just a number of people. I mean, it's loaded with women's basketball folks. Sue Donahoe was on it for years. Marcia Sharp is on it. It's a who's who. And so it's been a great way for us to help a good cause and also have a lot of fun in women's basketball. Yeah. So it's a win-win for us.
And I love hanging out with you guys.
Have you seen my picture here?
Is that me?
That's you. That's us in 2011, the first one we met at the Final Four.
That's a framed picture of me in John's office with his wife holding it, and it's me laying a big fat kiss on his cheek. Stu, you're all right with that?
Yeah. That's when we met at the Final Four in 2011.
Oh, gosh, awesome.
Yeah.
Well, that's so cool, John. Thank you so much for that. I mean, I appreciate everything you do, and I know how much you love the game, and I know how, you know, when you and I speak during the season, I mean, this is the conversation we have, just what we just did. It's me
that's
asking
right.
you questions, and you and I getting to share our passion for the game on in a way that we can share it with others.
We love women's basketball. It's been a lot. It's been a great season. We've had a lot of fun, and I do want to put in a plug. We've really enjoyed having it all in San Antonio. That's been really cool, having it in one location, and because now we bounce all over the country, you know, and so we've done that over the years, but this year we just went to San Antonio, and it was great.
It would be even better if we didn't have the pandemic, and the pandemic put us here. But
yep.
I think when we leave here, I think there's a lot of positives for fans and for players and coaches. And I've not heard a negative thing from a player or a coach about being in one spot.
No, it's great. It's been really great. Yeah.
Well, you're terrific, John. You and Sue are awesome. I'm so glad we're friends and we're like family now. And I appreciate so much everything you do, not just for the KYAO Cancer Fund, but how much you love the game and how much you're willing to share your passion for it.
Thank you. No, we enjoy it. I've enjoyed being on your program today. It's been a lot of fun, and I'm sure glad you didn't ask me about what I thought about the foul in the UConn-Baylor game. So,
well, go ahead. You brought it up.
No. I you know, I love Kim Mulkey. You know that. I love Kim Mulkey, and I think she's phenomenal. She's one of the greatest coaches in the game, and her record, only Gene Auriemma has a better winning percentage than Kim. And Kim has got the 600 faster than anybody, in men's or women's. And she's just phenomenal. But I do remember the 2003 and 2004 season. And it was the Sweet 16, and it was Norman, Oklahoma. And the winner moves on to the Elite Eight, and it was Baylor versus Tennessee. And it's a tie ball game, and Tasha Butts is going up to get a rebound, and she's bumped into and fouled at the buzzer.
I remember. Actually, I'm not going to name that official, but that official is working this final. This was working this Sweet 16.
But and you can imagine how upset Kim Mulkey was. I was there. I watched it. She was very upset, and I think after that, they instituted a Kim Mulkey rule that for years they said, we will never call a foul at the end of a game. And so, you know, what goes around comes around, huh?
Well, that's a long time ago, but I know exactly what play you're talking about, John. Coach Auriemma, I heard him after the game. He's like, if you coach long enough, you know, and you're in competitive situations like that, you know, he wanted to look at all the fouls that were called in the first half that allowed Baylor to shoot 11 free throws and they only shot two. So it was physical game.
It was a very physical game. And in all of the games, we watched all of them, all the Sweet 16, Elite Eight games, and all of those games, they were not calling many fouls. I'm just telling you, they were. If you were in and around the basket, they were letting you play.
I felt a difference in the way the games were being officiated also. And it's funny that you feel the same way as a fan.
Well, I was thinking that they probably had that they had to do it because of the time constraints as part of it. You can't have back-to-back games on national TV and they're only 2 hours apart. I mean, there's no time apart. You start one at 1 o'clock and the next one starts at 3, and you can't have them be on the free throw all night. So, I mean, you just can't.
You're calling conspiracy theory right here, John.
No. I'm just saying they decided to let them play. I'm saying.
This is like you and me on the phone, like we do all season. Exactly. Going back and forth. I love it.
But I do want to say I love Kim Mulkey. I don't want any of my comments to anybody say
she knows.
I love Kim Mulkey.
Look, you got grandchildren, and I know where you sent your grandkids to camp.
Yeah, they went to Baylor camp, so they did.
Yep. John, you're the best. So is Sue. We love you guys so much. Hashtag the Gibbs on social media, and look at all the pictures that are there with all the celebrities inside our game that John and Sue have made fast friends with, and coaches at all levels. And John, thank you so much for breaking down the game with us on Nothing But Net.
Thank you. It was a lot of fun. We'll do it again sometime.
We will.
Okay, take care.